Here today with Jason Harris from jasonsconnection.org, and Jason today is speaking with Monty Roberts, who is an American horse trainer who promises his techniques of natural horsemanship. Roberts believes that horses use a nonverbal language, which he terms equus, and that humans can use this language to communicate with horses. Mr. Roberts has authored a number of books, including his original bestseller, The Man Who Listens to Horses, and regularly tours with live demonstrations. He runs an equestrian academy in Solvang, California. Presently, Mr. Roberts works with veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. Through an innovative approach to coping with PTSD, Monty shares his vision in nonviolent communication, as veterans learn to interpret the behavior of horses and achieve join up, the moment when a horse will trust human contact. It is a powerful parallel for soldiers coping with emotional trauma, learning to understand how to control their anger, confront painful memories, cope with real life situations, and move on with their lives and relationships. Thank you, Monty Roberts and Jason Harris.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Can you tell us
about...
Are
you Jason?
Yes, I'm Jason.
Okay.
It's nice to meet you. Can you tell us about the traditional ways horses are broken and the way that you break horses?
Sure, I can. The traditional way, starting back in caveman times, was to break the horse. And that's why the word break came down through our generations of social contact with animals. We break them. We break them through violence. We hammer them into submission. It worked for wives, too, in the caves, and children, and has been carried on right through and up until our times. And in most countries now, beating your wife is illegal, but there are still countries where it's quite accepted. So breaking is the word, and that is traditional. That's the way it's been done for 6,000 years. That still goes on today, but it's going on less since I took my place in this scenario. And my way is without violence. There is no violence. There's no demand. There is the causing of the horse to want to do it, or you don't do it at all, whatever the situation is, whatever the request is. The horse chooses to do it, or he doesn't do it as well. And you don't go to work as well if you don't like your work as you do if you do like it. And if someone is forcing you to do the work, you will do it far less well. So that's my theory, and that's my way of life. And I've been doing this now since 1942, and I've produced 9 world champions in quite a few different disciplines, so it's working for me.
And can you tell us what join up is?
Yes, join up, defined, is that moment in time when the horse chooses to be with you instead of away from you. And recognizing that they're a flight animal, they want to be away from you if they consider you a predator. But enduring or engendering trust is what you do. And that's where the veterans come in, because they see that huge animal that's very big and very fast, more than a half a ton of flesh, that can move very rapidly. It's frightening. And you can take gang leaders from the inner cities, and they melt when they get in the pen with a big horse. So when that horse trusts you, they can understand the theory of trust, and then they can trust themselves. But it takes a bit of teaching along the way. It takes a bit of allowing that person to learn the value of trust and who they can trust and who they can't.
Mm-hmm. And when did you first notice and become interested in horse behavior?
When did I first notice to become...
And became interested in it, in horse behavior.
Oh, well, I have a picture of myself winning my first trophy when I was 4 years of age, and they tell me I was riding all by myself at 2 years of age. It was quite an unusual upbringing, and I had 72 broken bones before I reached the age of puberty, all by a father who demanded that I step in every track that he laid and do it his way. So I had to use violence on horses because he did, and he forced me to. So, yeah, I can't remember a time when I wasn't interested in the behavior of equus.
And how did your father being abusive shape the way you live your life now?
Well, you know, generally a child follows the pattern of his parents. Mm-hmm. Alcoholics beget alcoholics, and wife beaters beget wife beaters. Druggies beget druggies. That just happens. You go where you, even if you don't like what your parents do, you tend to go where your parents were. Mm-hmm. And I somehow broke that chain. I think it had to do a whole lot with a teacher in the primary grades who caused me to believe that breaking that chain was a critical, important thing in my life, and that I would never reach my potential in life if I didn't break that chain.
Mm-hmm. And is that one of one of the reasons that you think nonviolence is so important with horses and even humans?
Sure it is, and I can show you where I can reach about an 85% significant improvement in 3 days with most people who suffer from post-traumatic stress. Now, it's not post-traumatic stress disorder. Most every veteran that you'll talk to disdains the word disorder, and they don't want to hear it. They feel that a disorder won't heal, but an injury will. So I prefer to call it post-traumatic stress injury, or PTSI, than ever to brand them with a disorder.
And how have you sort of applied what you've learned with working with horses to humans, either with PTSI or with in different situations that you've come across?
Well, I learned how years and years and years ago. I raised 47 foster children, and I learned how to listen to the horses and realize that that flight animal that had never caused any harm to any other species responded better if you caused them to want to. And so the principles of the behavior of flight animals used with human beings that you would like them to be, to grow up nonviolent, is extremely valuable, and it's applicable to the growing up period of human beings.
Mm-hmm. What do you feel that people can learn from horse behavior?
That violence is never the answer. Violence is always for the violator and never for the victim. No one of us was born with the right to say, "You must or I'll hurt you," to any other creature, animal or human.
Now, I know you've worked a lot. You have a lot of school. You have a university and stuff. Do you work with scientists to help them understand horse behavior?
Scientist?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure I do. Scientists are awfully hard, just like most of our people are, to move off the status quo. Mm-hmm. And they have to have scientific proof that everything works. And that's okay. You know, that's a hoop that we all should have to jump through, because if it's going to work and you're going to change the world, and look what we have going on right now in more than half the world, if you're going to change that, then you have to prove with all the hoops to jump through that the absence of violence far outweighs the importance of the presence of violence.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like as people study horses that it will become more prevalent, like there are for cats and dogs now, and that will change the way that people treat horses and as well treat other people?
Well, one would hope so. And I think it's happening in Sao Paulo, Brazil. They train 500 police cadets each year. And only recently, after being for hundreds of years, an extremely violent body of people, the police of Brazil, after about 100 years, they changed completely after reading my books. And they now train, and they've invited me to come and meet the cadets. They now train by my principles. So the police of Brazil will be changed in a matter of 2 or 3 years. And the handling of horses is changing in Brazil right as we speak, unbelievably and rapidly. However, there are people who are fighting against it because the status quo is extremely hard to change.
Mm-hmm. How do you go about working with the people who are having trouble sort of changing the status quo? Is there a way to make them a little bit more comfortable with different processes?
Well, my principles outweigh the act of violence by demonstrating what can happen in the absence of violence. And I can show you horses learning. In other words, okay, by traditional methods, it takes 4 to 6 weeks for a horse to accept its first saddle and rider.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to every one of my demonstrations with the confidence that I'm going to take an untrained horse, and it will accept its first saddle and first rider in 30 minutes. 30 minutes compared to 4 to 6 weeks. Now, that's how fast horses can learn in the absence of violence. So it's happening worldwide. People are seeing this, and they're saying, oh, less accident, less trouble, less danger to horse and human, and less money spent on the training of horses. So when you get to that level, it will change.
So how would you advise, because I mean, it seems like too, you talk about humans being less violent to each other. How do you sort of recommend that for humans to be more okay with each other, be more like, how have you been able to put that into your life and explain that to other people?
Well, it's just by demonstration that if it works that well for this species, it'll work for our species too. And we know that in civilized worlds where it's against the law to beat up your wife or your children, that we are raising people who go to school, get an education, and do better than in those countries that promote violence in the raising of children and dealing with your wife.
Now, is this, with humans and even with horses, is this just physical violence, or does verbal violence take in some account too?
Oh, absolutely, and that's a super question, because I say that words can hurt as much as whips can.
Mm-hmm.
So words can be as violent as your fist. And wives know that, and secretaries know that. Every corporation has violence in it, because words can hurt as much as whips can. And the threatening and the calling of names, the demeaning of people through conversation is just as violent as taking a whip to them. In fact, I have a lot of wives that say to me, I just as soon he would hit me as to, call me the names and demean me.
Wow. And I know you're about to go to England, and one of the people you work with is the Queen of England, Elizabeth II. What is the Queen like, if you're allowed to share?
I wish we had 2 hours with this conversation right now, because this lady is the preeminent leader of the world in terms of influence for nonviolence. And I work with her in the pure and simple knowledge that this is one of the finest people that ever walked the face of this earth. Yes, she sells herself down, and she puts herself back, and she sends people out in front, i.e. me. She's sending me all over the world to put my concepts out there. And she said the first day that I ever met her and she watched my work, this has to go to the world. And then she said, this has to be a book. And the editors that she took me to said it would sell 3,000 to 5,000 copies and wouldn't even pay for the printing. And it has now sold 6 million copies. So they were wrong, and the Queen was right. And the Queen was the only one right, because I believed the people about the 3,000 to 5,000 copies. Who am I to think that I was to be a best-selling author on the New York Times bestseller list for 58 weeks? Who, you know, I had no right to think that. And yet it happened, and now I've written 8 books and worked with thousands of military people and have received a knighthood. For crying out loud, this lady is the most wonderful human being that you could ever come across. I owned horses with Ronald Reagan, and he was such a nice guy. And I feel that his intentions were always the best for everybody that he dealt with. And he was president for 8 years. So, I mean, he's a preeminent world leader, but there he is. I've worked with both of them, and he's a tiny parcel of what she's been in 65 years now of her reign as a world leader. So she's a lovely lady.
Wow. And how can people who with PTSI who want to get involved or are interested in horse healing and horse sense and healing clinics get involved with you all?
Yeah, MontyRoberts.com is my website. I have an online university too, but they can go to my website and they can look at the military aspects of that. I don't know anything about these computers, so I don't know what happens, but they can find me and it's free. They come to my clinics free. They get their lunch when they're here at my clinics free. So I've never received a penny for the work that I've done with veterans. And that's in England, Australia, and the United States and Canada, too.
Wow. You've obviously talked about it. You've had an incredible career, and I'm sure this is a tough question to answer, but what is one of the most rewarding things you've ever done?
You know, Jason, This is not a difficult question to answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy question to answer. And you're not supposed to, when you're a parent, pick children to be your favorite. But I can't help picking some of my veterans as favorites. And one certainly is Alicia Watkins, who was found in a sleeping bag under a bridge in D.C., homeless, after being an executive with the Air Force. She lost her home and her car. She lost her pride and everything that she had. She had nothing. And Marriott Hotels and United Airlines got her together and brought her to me here in California, quivering, had to sit in a corner, hoodie on, dark glasses. You couldn't see what she looked like. You couldn't get within 5 feet of her if you were a man. And she had been through unspeakable damage. And after 3 different clinics that I worked with her, she announced to me I had been encouraging her to apply for scholarships because she wanted to become a psychologist and work in my concepts to help returning veterans. And she came to me at the end of the third one, and she said that she had been accepted to Harvard School of Psychology. And I almost fell over. It was absolutely incredible to think that that's the most difficult school to get in, and she's there. And then she finished her first year number one in her class. Now, how good does it get? And at the end of that year, some people encouraged her, and she entered a contest for Ms. Massachusetts. And you can Google her now. She is Ms. Massachusetts. She won that. She smiles. She's beautiful. She wore a bikini to compete in that contest when she had to have her body covered tip to tip and then a hoodie on and dark glasses so that nobody could see her when I first met her. Now that's just one example, but a huge one. I love her to death. I was on Fox News something in the morning on the weekend with her, and I'm a very important author, you know, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you, she upstaged me massively. And why not? I'm a much worse thing to see than Alicia Watkins. She has amazed me.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us today. It's been amazing to hear things. If there's any last thing you'd like to say or any concepts or something, that would be amazing. Thank you so much.
Well, I would just say that violence is never the answer. And to stay with me on MontyRoberts.com. I have a Facebook, Monty Roberts. And I would encourage your listeners to be friends with me on that. We have 336,000 now friends on Facebook. And off I go to England and then back to New Orleans to speak to the American Humane Society. Then I go to Hungary and then back to Germany and tour Germany. Then I go to Shanghai, China, and branch off there to go to Australia. And I work on a tour in Australia, and then I'm back here in California to meet with my global instructors in May. So my life is hectic. I'm 80 years old, and I'm going as fast as I can go. And I love it, and I'm happy to do this interview and to let you know what's going on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason.
Have a great day and have a good trip.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.